Hellman on CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's say what's happening to two of Design Indaba's emerging creatives for 2016. They are going to introduce themselves, and then they're going to tell you the most interesting thing about them. Let's kick it off with you.
I'm Max Melville, and most interesting thing about me is probably, and Andrew Brookman's going to squirm in his pants, I used to have a cat fetish when I was growing up.
How does that, what does a cat fetish mean? What does it translate to?
I was just into cats.
Like, okay.
My birthday, my mom used to make me cat cakes. I used to the cat atlas, the annual cat atlas every year. And no, listen, I was just a big fan.
So you, you must be upset you missed the whole cat videos thing online growing up.
Do you
delve into that every now and then?
I think my interest with the felines was sort of pre-video stage. Okay. And then I was luckily out of that stage by the time sort of, video content was going viral.
But to be fair, everyone delves into a cat video every now and then, don't deny it.
I'm actually really not a cat person at home. Like, our cat at home, I'm actually sort of avoid in the hallways.
Okay.
Snake.
An odd relationship with the cat.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Max. And the other voice there belongs to?
Jamil Randera. And I would say the most interesting thing about myself is that I was born in an elevator.
Wow.
Well, pretty much. And my mum loves to tell this story.
What about the white poo you had on your fourth birthday?
For some strange reason, the maternity ward was on like the 13th floor of the building.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was halfway out before the doors opened.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's a great conversation starter for both of you. I mean, the cat thing, I don't know. So
a little bit more creepy.
Depends where you are. If you're at a cat convention, that might score you loads of credentials.
That cat thing stays in this room.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. No, it's fine. Just between you, me, and everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you're both architects. It says here in very formal terms that you share a deep-rooted interest in the built environment and the vital role architecture plays in defining it. If we had to try and put that into a meme, what would that look and sound like?
Put that into a meme? Well, personally, I'd put a cat somewhere. I don't know.
What's the gist of it? I mean, you're just passionate about creating great spaces, right?
For sure, but I think at this stage, when we both only graduated from UCT Architecture School last year, so we haven't actually really got our hands on actually designing and building the spaces that we are interested in, but it doesn't mean that we are not interested in the sort of, I suppose, the primal connection between humans and the built environment and the sort of spaces we inhabit. So, yeah, I'm not sure about the meme, but I suppose that's in some ways an answer.
Mm. We'll touch on what Max said. So the project which we, I suppose, are here to discuss is our own project, which isn't necessarily an architectural project per se, but it's highlighting that connection between architecture and the human.
Mm.
And that, how architecture entails a story and how everyone has this personal relationship with certain buildings. So that's what, I suppose, on the journey that we are on now is sort of trying to unravel this side of architecture.
And we're going to talk about Plus Ness in a second, this project that you guys have both embarked upon and is the reason for, your participation in Design Indaba Emerging Creatives. But I want to find out, that first day of going into architecture, that first day at UCT, people have a perception of what architecture is, and both of you probably had an idea of what it is. But when you actually start studying it and you start, going to varsity day in and day out, how does the perception versus the reality of architecture change from sort of an ideological perspective as a kid to when you really start doing it?
Well, I think everyone is aware that architecture exists, but to actually have a sort of in-depth knowledge or really know about it is a completely another thing. Personally, going into architecture, I'd always sort of been told, you might find that interesting or whatever. So I was like, cool, whatever, sign me up. And then, over the sort of seven-year journey, like it was really, if I had to look at the end point and look back into the beginning, like architecture was nothing what I expected to be. Like, and I think everyone everywhere, is aware that there are buildings and sort of has an opinion on it, but sort of really getting into the depths of sort of working with the human dynamics and actually designing the spaces we live in is like a completely another kettle of fish. And like personally, I found that fascinating to
it's psychology, to yeah.
No, completely.
Jamil?
Yeah, of course, from the beginning to the end, like my perception had completely changed. I think going in there, I didn't really have a clue about, I think I had like the tip of the iceberg of what I knew, of course, with anything and with any design field. But I think what the most interesting thing and most exciting thing is that, as Max said, like everyone has this idea of what architecture is and an opinion on it. And it's in some ways, it's not fickle, but it's quite surface-based and just like first impression. But I think when you start to really study it and understand it, and you actually know how things are put together and how much effort it takes to actually make something look that bad or that good, on how every little piece of a building has been thought about and how it's joined. And then that, to me, is like obviously the most fascinating thing, which is something that before I started studying was really I had no idea about, you know.
How does one get better at predicting the best possible way for humans to engage with a space? Because you're trying to create spaces that are the most accessible, that are the easiest to navigate, that fulfill the objectives of what people need to get done in that space in the best possible way. So how do you get better at kind of, you know, and we're living in an age of, you know, everybody being an individual and people doing exactly what it is they want and finding their voice and, you know, moving in the ways that they want and speaking in the ways that they want. So how do you get better at predicting how you're going to mold the space to best serve people who by nature are unpredictable?
Well, I think it's a very hard question just because, as you said, everyone's different and everyone's got your sort of unique preferences. With regards to any particular space, there are so many variables that from the outset you might not have thought were relevant going into it. Like if you just had to look at the studio, for example, for this to run effectively, it goes from everything to obviously the basic dimensions to the ceiling height, the height of the desk, the ergonomics of the chair, and all that stuff is sort of incorporated. So it's hard to predict, but you definitely, I think, become more aware of how people will naturally navigate around the space that you design, whether they're actually conscious of that or not. And I think on many levels, good architecture, people should naturally engage with it on a unconscious level. Because I think if you, especially if it's a space where you just need to walk through, or it's a studio or a library, whatever, if you really actually thinking about what's going on, I suppose things are probably in the wrong place. So if all happens in a complete smooth flow, then
that's a good way to look at it.
You've probably done a good job, which is, I suppose, that enters the paradox, because all the best architecture in the world, if that is true, then people actually aren't really taking notice of it. They're just aware that it's working, but they're not really taking notice of it.
Because you only take notice of things when they're not really working very well.
Which is
the sad part of it.
Yeah, what is the saying going? If it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
In terms of South Africa and where we're at with our own architecture industry, and, you know, in terms of if we're leading global conversations or not, do you find that stuff in SA is designed well or not so well? Jamil definitely thinks we're doing a terrible job.
The thing is, like, it's a hard thing.
No, you've got to be honest. Yeah. If it's something people can get better at, then we need to make sure you know, that message is out there.
See, the sad thing is that the buildings that people are coming in everyday contact with and really using a lot are really just terrible. They've been designed so badly, and they're all these glass houses, you know. They're just they're all about the image, and I don't really think they have the user at heart, nor do they have a long-term plan. Like, so if you look at, sorry to name and shame, if you look at the Sandton CBD, for example, which is a pet hate, I suppose, like, every building is trying to stand out, and every building is trying to be the building. And there's sort of no camaraderie between each building. They all stand alone, and they don't talk about, they don't speak to the street, and they don't make nice spaces other than internal spaces, which for me is a bit of a shame. It's a huge missed opportunity where you have so much exciting potential development being wasted. And the sad thing is that the architecture that is really effective and, well, not the sad thing, but the architecture that is effective and really, making good headwear and future headwear is like much smaller social projects, which a lot less people come into contact with. But when they do, it makes a much bigger difference in their lives.
So we've always said, and it's something we've written about in the past, is what does it say here? Architecture is like people. All architecture we come across influences us, and just like people, not all of architecture is nice. Think about all the people you know and have met. Now think about all the people you love. This ratio with regards to architecture is probably the same or less. So that sort of touches on what Jamil was saying. Probably like just as the people you meet, most people you meet aren't in your sort of close sort of circle of friends. You know, like at one given time, one person probably has, I don't know, 10 really close friends. Like, and it's the same with buildings. We come across and interact with hundreds of buildings in a week, and like you're lucky if you come across one that's like really special.
So here's another question then, and this is kind of just predicting, what do you think would be the outcome if we changed our spaces? What impact would that make in terms of bettering the country? If we had to look at a South African context right now and we had to rework the Sandton CBD that it works a little better, what impact would that have on people? Because the reason I ask is that I think people underestimate how much influence your surroundings and the structure of your surroundings actually influences your output and your ability as a human being to, you know, do certain things and so on and so forth. And we don't give that enough credit because we think we just need to get a job done or whatever. So what do you think the changes would be if our design was a little better and a little bit more thought out?
I think you sort of answered your own question in some ways, because like you said, like the value of your surroundings on your output is enormous. Like,
but people don't realize
it. They're only realizing it when it's not really working for them. Like we said, like when design is bad and it doesn't work properly, then you're obviously a lot less efficient. So when good design comes into play, and I suppose your employees are happier because they're in a nice environment and they're almost like they want to get up and go to work because it's a nice place to be, and the environment is light and natural and comfortable. I think that directly will influence like people's happiness and then directly influence their output.
But Johannesburg has like I suppose all cities do, but Johannesburg has a fascinating history of how it's sort of developed. Because if you look at it from an aerial map, it's just this complete suburban sprawl. And obviously these sort of external influences or variables that I was mentioning earlier, like people's perception of crime or whatever it may be, like a lot of this sort of suburban sprawl, which is Johannesburg, is people who have this desire to live in these large properties and be surrounded by these massive walls. And in terms of your sort of impact on the city, like that just drives, because these large projects are sort of amassed next to each other, like distances between desirable places are so far from each other that it's just sort of entrenched this motor reliance or like this car culture, like where like to live in Johannesburg, it's hard to live without a car or for many people. So I think if like a lot of things were relooked, something like maybe if there was a more of an openness from society to sort of embrace like high density living, then like our cities will become a lot more walkable and like a lot more efficient in many ways. And not only is that a positive influence on the city, but also the environment.
Absolutely, yeah. And like I was saying, and you guys, you know, said it as well, people don't really pay enough attention to how much influence your surroundings have on you. We're going to run out of time. We've got to talk about plus less. What's the gist of this here?
Well, it all started in our sort of final year of studies, and we were just actually involved in this fundraising auction that was set up to help raise the finances for a research trip that we were involved with the rest of our master's class. And we thought, okay, well, how can we contribute to this, the success of this evening, but also really embark on something that we are interested in? And as you mentioned in the beginning, we're both sort of deeply passionate about our built environment. So we went about, how do we sort of shed a new light on the cities we live in and in some way help people better appreciate the architecture around them? So we went about sort of highlighting various buildings in the cities that we've come into contact with that we thought had some sort of relevance, and then sort of packaged and represented them in a way that we thought would be appealing and desirable from by the common good.
It's very cool. It's really, really cool. And what kind of response did you get?
Yeah, we've had a good response so far. It's been what for us is, and why we really do this actually is because we're doing some of the very well-known buildings and some buildings which are much lesser known, and what really keeps us going is that, like, when a building isn't very well known, someone comes up to us. Like, for example, there's a building in Cape Town called the SAF Marine House, which is
it's a prominent building, but not many people know about it.
Nor would people would be talking about it. It wouldn't say it's a beautiful building by any means, but as we said earlier, each building has a story, and each person has some sort of relationship with some building. Mm. So with this particular drawing of this building, a woman came up to us and was the first person to buy the drawing of this building. And she said, oh, she loves this building. Her husband works on the ships, and every time before he goes out for long periods of time, they meet at this building, and it's the last place she sees him. So it's
and
this
the first place she sees him when he comes back.
Exactly. So this building took on like a new life for her.
Yeah.
And a story which we had no idea about this building. So I think for us, like, any response like that is so positive and so exciting. And even if we're not selling large amounts, or those sort of personal stories that keep coming out are really... I suppose you could even write a book about these stories in some ways.
Absolutely. Well, spaces are associated with people's stories. You design it, and then you never know what's going to happen. Someone getting murdered in the house you designed. Yeah. It's just the way it's going to roll out.
For sure.
So you touched on that word relationship, Jamil. And so the final question to the two of you will be, how would you describe your relationship with design? So hypothetically, you guys are in a relationship on Facebook. Is it complicated? Are you married? Are you divorced? Where do you sit on the spectrum if design was bae? How would you describe how that relationship is rolling out in your life?
I think Jamil should go first.
Design.
So last year in my thesis year, in my master's year, we worked on a project for an entire year. And it's definitely a love-hate relationship with this building that you're working on. And now every time I walk past the site of where my building was, I sort of like, if I'm walking with a friend or with someone, I'm sort of like, yeah, and this is my ex. You know? we don't talk anymore, but so just like if she sees me, I'm just gonna look away. You know? But then at the moment, I have a huge love relationship with design in general, and I just know what positive it can do. And
yeah.
And it's such an exciting field to be in, especially in South African in South African context. But yeah, it's love hate, I think.
Max?
Yeah, I suppose I've got a
versus your relationship with cats.
I suppose I've got a similar response. But I think what's really exciting about design, and that was what was really cool about being part of the Design and DABA program, is just seeing the incredibly or this endless amount of ways in which design can manifest itself. Mm. And through these different manifestations, how it can just reach different people for different causes, different benefits. And personally, that's what has always kept me interested in design, whether you actually designing an armchair or you're designing a skyscraper. I suppose the sort of same principles are the same. So I suppose I've also, yeah. No, I got a good relationship with design.
Both going steady. Looks like things are on the right track.
If you had to ask design about its relationship with us, it might be a different answer.
The bitter ex.
Yeah.
all right. Max Melville, Jamil Randera, thank you so much for stopping by. Two of the emerging creatives from Design and DABA 2016 Emerging Creatives Program. If people want to find out more about the Plusness project.
We're currently obviously expanding the brand and going from strength to strength, and we're busy working on our website. The fabulous Kim Lomba is actually behind the scenes there, working day and night, getting us with an awesome setup there. So that's website will be citynest.co.za.
Yeah, www.city.citynest.co.za, and that should be live in the next 2 weeks, hopefully, Kim.
Yeah, it's official now, Kim. Yeah.
Well, listen, guys, thank you so much for stopping by. And, of course, to find out more about you, I'm sure people can go to designindaba.com also. Mm. Jamil and Max, thanks so much for swinging past.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks very much. Kelman on CliffCentral.com.